Welcome to the Brush with Brit podcast. I'm your host, Brit, and I'm thrilled to have you join me on this exciting journey into the world of dentistry. With a decade of experience in the dental field, I bring a wealth of knowledge and expertise to help guide you on your path. Having spent 8 years as a registered dental assistant, followed by 3 years as a dental hygienist, I've had the privilege of gaining practical experience in both roles. Beyond my clinical practice, I'm passionate about mentorship, guiding others, and advocating for dental hygienists and patients. Through this podcast, my aim is to create a supportive space where you can learn, grow, and relate to the ups and downs of being a dental professional. Whether you're looking to expand your knowledge, enhance your skills, or simply stay up to date with the latest trends in dentistry, you've come to the right place. Together, let's embark on a journey of personal and professional development, empowering you to become the best dental professional you can be. It is so hard to stay on time when practicing clinically. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Color Method by Zurich Dental Products. It helps me stay organized, which ultimately leads me to being more efficient, and it saves me time. Color Method is a color-coded organizational system that helps in the management and location of instruments and materials in the dental office. If you're thinking, Brit, I don't have time for that, or the boss won't let us, Zurich has everything you need to guide you through the process, including clinical coaches that will help you organize your office. To learn more about the Color Method, visit colormethod.com and enter code BRIT for 25% off the Silver Consulting Plan.
I have so many people that ask me about doing things outside of clinical hygiene, so I would love if you could introduce yourself to the audience and let them know a little bit about your background.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Jessica Woods. I've been a hygienist for about 12 years. And prior to that, I was a dental assistant. So I think I've been in the dental field a little over 20 years now. But I grew up with like a family of dentistry. My grandpa was a dentist. So if you count the times where I was like assembly charts and punching x-rays, it's even been longer than that. But I was kind of, I guess, born into dentistry. Even it was kind of against my will at one point.
And then how did you get to like where you are today? So you have been a hygienist, and then now what are you currently doing?
You know, I started as a clinical hygienist, like most people do. But I think if you talk to some of my instructors in school, I always said, like, I probably won't be in clinical for long. And I think part of that was because I had been a dental assistant for so long. And so I was pretty young and knew that, like, I wanted to advance my career. So I went to hygiene school to, like, try to advance opportunities for myself. So after being like a clinical hygienist for about 5 years, you know, like many people who are exploring career opportunities outside of the op, started to feel, you know, a little bit burned out and my body was aching. And so what I first transitioned in doing is starting to work a little bit more in public health. At the time I was living in California, so I became an RDHAP, so I was able to, you know, practice on my own, have a little bit more freedom and control over my schedule and how I practiced and how much time I got to spend with patients. And so that was, I think, a pivotal point in my career doing that. Unfortunately, I know that's not always an option in every state. And so I was very fortunate to be in a state that allowed that. From that, I started my own portable practice and was working with like nursing homes and schools. And because of that experience, I got connected with an oral health nonprofit in California. And I was just working in one of their school-based programs, and the manager of the program left and I moved into that role. And so that was kind of the first time I stepped into a more administrative role, and I just really loved it. I felt like that's where I was meant to be. We need our clinical hygienists, that's for sure. We need that patient care. But for me, I was really looking to you know, make an impact more at the systemic level, you know, for the field. And so I worked a lot in advocacy, oral health advocacy, when I was with that nonprofit. And then I also oversaw a school-based preventive program for preschool-age students in one of the largest counties in the United States. And so that really helped me kind of grow and learn the industry from a different perspective.
Yeah, I think for, some of the listeners that aren't familiar with RDHAP, I'm glad that you brought that up because I'm also in the state of California. So for an RDHAP, you can basically start to work on your own without a dentist being present, and you can own a mobile clinic and even a like actual practice as well in underserved areas. And I'm thinking about, which I most likely will do, is getting my RDHAP, and I would start that program in January. But I think that's a great option for people who are looking to just advance their profession, and see what else is out there, because like clinical hygiene is great, and like you said, we need our clinical hygienists, but also like just venturing out and figuring out these other things is also really fun too. So I'm glad that you brought that up because not everybody knows what a RDHAP is. And I'm still learning that there are other terms that are kind of similar to RDHAP.
Yeah, so I'm located now in Nevada, and in Nevada, it's called a public health endorsed hygienist. So it's very similar. I mean, the process about going, getting an approval is a little bit different, but the scope is very similar. And yeah, each state is very different. And honestly, surprisingly, even hygienists that live in Nevada don't even know that that's an option for them. And, through some of my work, I actually started the Dental Public Health Collaborative, which is a nonprofit, and we offer support and technical assistance to public health hygienists and public health professionals. We do offer support to like assistants or dentists as well, but a good portion of what we do is hygienists because that's the volume of really who's out there doing this work. And one of my missions with that is to educate, other hygienists in the state that this is possible, because I still meet people, regularly that don't know that they can be doing this. What I like about California's model is that there's an education pathway for it. And it's pretty straightforward. You meet the requirements, you take the course, you take the examination, and you're awarded your license. In Nevada, it's a little bit different. It's up to the discretion of the board. You basically have to design a program, and you have to submit it to the board, and then they have to approve it. With that model, it's a little bit more subjective, and it's not as straightforward, and there can be challenges, challenges on both sides, if you're not familiar with writing protocols and things like that. And then also, could be the makeup of the board and how supportive they are to the idea of hygienists, seeking these alternative career paths. And so the collaborative that I started offers support to the hygienist. It started as just Nevada. It was Nevada public, collaborative. But what I found is there's a lot of hygienists in other states that need support too. And so I've worked with other hygienists, from other places in the country to try to offer them support, which can be challenging because I have to learn all the, the laws and the
Yeah,
ins
it's different.
and
And I recently shared on my Instagram about starting the RDHAP program here in California. And I actually had a dentist reach out to me and they said, can you tell me more about that? Because I'm a cosmetic dentist and I actually don't want to do the hygiene part of it in my office. So how would I be able to like refer my patients to get their cleanings like from you? And so we were like talking back and forth, but it was really interesting to see that even a dentist working in California didn't know about the option of an RDHAP. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, and you bring up a really good point because, a lot of dentists tend to be resistant, to the idea of hygienists, pursuing, they hear independent practice or direct access, and they don't like that. And I understand. But I worked with, when especially when I was in California, I worked with a lot of dentists, and really the ones that got on board and supportive and, didn't look at it as a threat to them. It was a great tool for their aging population. It's like these are patients who, maybe age out of your practice. They're in a nursing home now. They don't have transportation. They're not seeking dental care. And so what I would do is I would be that intermediary between the office and the patient. So I had, offices that would refer me patients. I'd go to the nursing home. I'd see them. I'd send the dentist a report so they stayed in the know about what was going on. We managed, their preventive and hygiene care. And then if there was a problem that arose, then I would tell the, the family or caregiver, hey, this needs attention. It's worth you taking the day off work and, taking, your mom or your dad into the office. And so I think if we pose it like that, like these are patients you would lose, and we're kind of able to be an extension of your office. And that's the approach I would take. And it was
Yeah.
pretty successful for me.
It's such a great way to collaborate with all of the different professions that like we should all be collaborating with, right? Like if you're in a nursing home and you're able to speak to the people that are there that are taking care of the patient on a daily basis, and then you're also like referring over to their general dentist or, whatever the case is, like we should all be collaborating and talking together. So I feel like it's a great way to, it's like I feel like it's not It shouldn't be seen as a threat, especially if we're like collaborating together in order to give patients the best care that we can provide, especially with RDHAP being in like underserved areas.
Exactly,
Yeah.
exactly.
So, switching topics a little bit, I wanted to hear you share a little bit about your current role and what you are doing now in dentistry.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I moved to Nevada and I just was did not want to go back into clinical. And thankfully, I found a position. I was working for a dental implant company and totally, didn't know too much about implants. I mean, I had worked in a perio office, I knew the basics. And I kind of just jumped in, and it was a really great experience. And really, I think, propelled my career learning kind of the commercial aspects of products. I was a clinical affairs manager there. And so, what that means is, there's, it's modeled different ways within different companies. But I would oversee all of our clinical education. So we had a training facility in Las Vegas where our customers would come and train and learn how to, use implants and use our products specifically. And so with that, I had to learn a lot about implants and the market. I had to be able to answer questions for the doctors. You realize, a lot of dentists, they don't learn a lot about implants in school. And so it's that post, that postdoctorate education that they need to help them. I'd manage all these professional education, all of our speakers, our key opinion leaders. And then also, as I became more proficient in the role, I got to work in other areas where I started to learn, the regulatory side of the business. Most of the products have to be approved by the FDA, and there's a lot that goes into that. I got to work with our R&D teams and be that kind of intermediary between our customer and our engineers, where, hey, this is like the type of product that our customer is looking for, and then work with our engineers on like designs. They would send designs and then, show them to me, and I'd be like, oh no, it has too many angles. That's like a plaque trap, and get to do like these really crazy things that I never thought as a hygienist I would get to do.
Yeah, that's super cool. I feel like what an awesome role to have, like to be able to like give your input like that. It's pretty incredible. How did
Yeah.
you go about finding that?
I mean, I think it was just a determination not to go back to clinical, and a little bit of serendipity that it happened at the same time. And I was definitely out of my element when I first started. But after being in the role for some time, really became kind of an expert on our product. And that, that particular company, we had a lot of product SKUs, lots of different, designs of implants. We had biological materials. We had all sorts of, prosthetic components. And so it was a lot to learn and take on. But I think for me, it was probably what I needed, that next step in my career to just kind of push my intellect a little bit. And
Yeah.
learn a little bit more. And, from that, I was able to really learn like what goes on in the background and, how the, speaking works. And I was able to get plugged into speaking events on my own, speak for my company, speak, and then from there, I'm sure kind of as start some things start snowballing, then other people seek you out to start talking about things. And so, it's just kind of like rabbit hole, like
Do you feel
different.
like a lot of or some of that came from just networking and just putting yourself out there, or also maybe using like other platforms like LinkedIn and Indeed and things like that?
Yeah, I definitely think networking, just, once, being there for your company and with your speakers, you meet other people or somebody. I know sometimes someone will see me speak on behalf of my company and then they reached out because, they want something similar. Yeah, definitely utilizing, I think LinkedIn is, great. It tends to be a little bit more professional and you can, have more of that intellectual content going on. But also Instagram, great way, whenever I have a webinar, spread the word
Yeah.
and, get people to, sign up for that.
And is this your current position now, or was that prior?
No, so I actually just transitioned into a new role. So I'm the Senior Vice President of Clinical and Scientific Affairs for a company called Incisive Technology. They are a startup, so it's a little bit, different than where I was working. I was working more in, for a large corporation that had many brands. And now I'm working more in startup land and, getting to learn a lot about that because it is very different. But I'm very excited about the product. I was brought on to help. It's an Australian-based company, and so I was brought on to help with their US rollout of the product. So, I kind of came into my previous role, and there was obviously some framework, and now this role is taking that experience and building it from scratch. And so, getting, now it's like, getting our products in the hands of clinicians and getting these clinical photos and, all the guides that you get when you buy a product or all the videos on YouTube, how-to videos, there's someone behind the scenes like me that's facilitating that and making it happen. And so that's because basically in a nutshell of kind of what my role is now. And then, identifying, okay, who are, the clinicians on the speaking circuit that, align with our product and, reaching out to them and meeting with them and, getting them to try our products and, kind of building out all that education piece as well.
Is this something that you're able to do full time, or is it more of a part-time situation?
No, both of my roles were full-time roles with
Wow.
benefits.
You're like, you had to throw that in there because
Yeah.
that's the thing with hygienists. That's awesome. Wow. So you're no longer practicing in clinical hygiene?
I do still here and there. Thankfully, working remotely allows, for some flexibilities and then obviously on the weekends and things. So I do still temp. I still do things like I was doing over the weekend. I was doing outreach in a rural area, not too far from where, about an hour from where I live. And so you definitely still, I truly believe you have to, keep your hands in clinical to, you got to stay clinically relevant. And I think also both of my employers were very supportive and I think valued that as well. And so, I get out there and then sometimes I'll take my product and we'll try it, and then I
Yeah.
get to, see it. And, when I was working for the implant company, I would go sit chairside while doctors are doing surgeries and get to see them using our products and get their feedback, on the spot and take pictures and, do all of that stuff. So you're still, I think that's the really cool thing about my role is, you have a lot of people in the office that are doing things behind the scene, but I still got to be kind of that in between where I was working between our commercial team and then our clinical customers. And so,
That's such
yeah.
a great way, like, to be able to utilize all the different like talents and things that you have, you know, as a hygienist. I feel like even for me, because I've only been practicing for 3 years, like when we think of being a hygienist, we specifically think of that clinical role, but there is so much going on like outside of that. And I feel like it's also keeps it like really fun. Not that clinical isn't fun or interesting, but you just keep expanding on your role, you know, like, because we met at the volunteer Crest Oral B event in Las Vegas. And that was something that I never got to experience. And that was like really, really fun for me. And I feel like every hygienist should get those different types of experience to see what other roles we can be in and do try things like speaking. Even if you don't think it's for you, you might end up like really liking it later on, you know?
Yeah, I think, you know, with my speaking, you obviously don't just like feel comfortable. You know, your local hygiene association, they're probably always looking for free speakers. And so, you know, I would have some like crazy ideas for lecture topics. Like recently I did one on, it was called Flossing for Fertility. And it was about, you know, the impacts of oral health on infertility. And so, you know, I'm like, hey, I kind of got this crazy idea. Like, I'm not going to charge you. I put it together. And, you know, they can make a little money off the tickets. You're giving back to your, you know, professional association. You get to try out one of your lectures. And, you know, from that, a lot of times, like I did one on mental wellness. And, you know, I'm so happy to see that it's like a growing topic. But like I did this, you know, years ago, you know, pre-pandemic and everything. And from that, you know, someone, you know, saw that I did that lecture. And then I did it at the American Academy of Implant Dentistry. Like I would have never thought, you know, like that I could be the keynote speaker for their hygiene track, you know, talking about mental wellness and things. So it's kind of,
I think too, like when we think about it, like there's so many topics out there that people have like questions about. Like I had a DM today about something about celiac disease. And I was like, you know, I don't think that I know too much about that. And I went and looked and there was like an article written about it from RDH magazine. But I think that there are so many topics that people can write about that haven't been written on or even, you know, done a lecture on. And for me, I started the same way, like with speaking, which I'm still very new at it, but I started with like a small lecture that I just like randomly tested out. I think the college actually reached out to me, but it was like a 30-minute lecture and I just tested it out. And then I did it again for like a little bit of a bigger class and just kept it rolling. And so I feel like it's a good way to like get your feet in the water and then see how it goes. And you might end up really liking it, which there's a lot that goes into speaking that I had no idea about.
Yeah, people like, you know, think it's just, you know, this glamorous, you're on the podium, but there's so much like time and work. Like, you know, I spend hours and hours like just on a 1 hour lecture. So imagine these people who are delivering full day or 2 day lectures or week long lectures. Like, and then,
I'm like, how?
Yeah. And then, especially if it's like clinical content, you know, they're having to document all their cases, you know, it's like, take your gloves off, take a picture, you know, glove back up, take another picture, you know, like it is. And, you know, I have people like approach me, you know, like, hey, I want to speak for your company. And I'm like, okay, well, send me an example of your slide deck. Show me some of your cases. And they're like, oh, you don't just like provide that for me? I'm like, no,
you got to make it
provide that for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Which like the part of, well, so I've done one in-person speaking event. It was a student session. And that to me, like it's definitely different than a webinar. But I really loved being able to be like in person and connect with people that way. That was super fun for me, but it does, you have to put in that work of making that slide deck. And I think that part is like the most surprising part when you start speaking. Cause like you said, you're like, oh, you don't just provide that. You're like, no, no, you have to make that and you have to put in the time to put it together. So it can take time and it can be challenging for sure.
Yeah. And it's like definitely an art, you know, to get the flow down and the timing. Cause, you know, I tend to, when I'm up there, you know, talk really fast. Maybe I'm probably talking really fast right now too, but like, you know, when you're practicing at home, you're a lot like composed and
Yeah.
slower, and you're like, yeah, this is good. And then there's been times where I'm like, oh shoot, it was only like 45 minutes. So then you're like, you got to really know what you're talking about, because you got to like fill in that gap, especially, if someone's paying you for an hour, they want you to speak for an hour.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that's challenging too, it's like depending on how engaged the audience is. Sometimes they're like super engaged and you just start flowing, and they're asking questions, and now you're like, oh gosh, I don't have enough time. But like then there's been times where it's like you're just kind of getting blank stares, and you're like, come on, people, like engage with
Yeah,
me.
like come on, give me some energy.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I have definitely experienced that. And I've had like random hiccups along the way too, where like one of the webinars I did, I had my light on and I didn't have it plugged in. So it literally like died in the middle of me speaking. And it by the time, so when I started, it was like sunlight out. And then by the time my light died, it was like pitch black. And I was like, hold on, I'm gonna go turn my light on. I'm just like, that was the worst. I will never do that again.
Yeah, it totally just kills your vibe. Like I've had it before where like I think my internet went out and I was giving a webinar, and you're like, oh, I don't know when I'd like to cut out, and
Yeah.
you get all frazzled, and but we're all human, and
Yeah,
it
stuff
happens.
happens, but I definitely enjoy the speaking part of being a hygienist, and also like writing articles can be really fun too. I don't, have you written articles? I'm not familiar.
Yeah, so I've not really for like any like big publications. It's actually on my like, I don't really do like a resolution list, but I do my goal list, and it is on the list. I feel like I've reached a point in my career, and I feel like I can kind of like breathe now too. Like I'm not just like constantly taking in information and trying to process it. And so I've really been like, okay, I need to kind of like share some of this stuff so other
Absolutely.
people, like maybe it'll help somebody else. And so, yeah, I definitely want to. I've done some writing. A lot of the writing that I've done is more in like the advocacy space or like public health, like, writing like issue briefs and white papers and things like that. I'd like to write more, I guess, not so academic
Yeah.
writing.
Yeah,
Style.
I think that that would definitely be helpful, because when we first met too, I was like, wait, what do you do? Tell me about all the things that you're doing outside of clinical hygiene. This is amazing.
I know I can send people's heads spinning. I feel like I'm like, well, I do this and I do that, but I think it's really like it just comes down to like a desire. I've always said just kind of creating like opening doors for yourself, creating opportunities, like. If I don't know, a lot of times, I'm like, oh, this sounds cool to me. I don't know if it'll be cool for anyone else. And then I just kind of go do it. And then you're like, oh, okay, other people are into this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I was onto something.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much room for growth in dental hygiene. It takes more than a few people to advocate for us. It has to be, all of us creating all these different roles and avenues for us to get into, It can be hard, like it can definitely be scary, like starting a new position and things like that, but there is just so much room for us to grow. So I'm super excited to see what people do like outside of clinical hygiene, in addition to just clinical hygiene is changing in general, so that part too. But thank you so much for sharing about what you do and just advocating for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was reading like Dental Nachos or something the other day, and it was like a dentist that was like halfway through dental school and like second guessing, and I felt so bad for that person, because I just don't think they, I think as a student you don't realize like all the opportunities, like you said, you just think clinical. Even when I tell people I'm a dental hygienist, they're like, oh, what office do you work at? I'm like, well, I don't. And then I try to explain them and they don't get it. So half the time I'm just like, yep, I'm a dental hygienist. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
But that person, I think I even commented on it, and I was like, there's so many opportunities. Like, just make it through school. I do think that you need to have a good base knowledge of, clinical. Like, you can't
Yeah.
just graduate school and, be a product expert, or, if you've never even like, used this stuff. So, I think you, like, even if you're feeling like clinical is not for you, like, just kind of go through the motions, you try to make the best of it, get the experience you need, but there's so many other career opportunities out there. And I think it's a combination of just putting yourself out there, networking, meeting new people, and then also like knowing where to look and knowing what to look for.
I think that's a great point because you and I both have assisting experience, and I get the question all the time, like, do you recommend being an assistant before being a hygienist? And I mean, I could talk about that forever, but I feel like a lot of my experience that I do have are from my 8 years of being an assistant and being like side by side with the doctor. And then, going through hygiene school and now practicing as a hygienist has given me that base that, that you're talking about. And I know that like clinical is hard, but it is really important for us to have that experience and truly know the preventative side of it, before, just venturing out and not doing the clinical part of it. So I really like that you said that.
Yeah, and I think even when you are out of the op, as I mentioned, I think it's important that you still go in there. So I temp, I meet a lot of people, customers, and they're all, and we know we have a hygiene store, and they're always like, "Do you want to temp in my office?" And every once in a while they'll catch me saying yes, because I'll be like, "Oh, actually, I have a free day. Sure, let me pop in," and
Yeah, that's a good point too, because most of the, if not all of the like speakers I'm in contact with, everybody is at least practicing like 2 days a month or something like that, at least to keep that clinical skill. And like you were saying, to be, knowledgeable and relevant because things are always advancing. So, and always changing. And then you kind of lose that like credibility when you're not practicing clinically anymore. Some people feel that way. So you do still have to practice
yeah, I
clinically.
mean, it's your roots. Like, it's like, and there's sometimes where I start feeling like, when they updated all the AAP guidelines, I was like, okay, I gotta get back to my roots here. 'Cause like, if I don't like start to understand this or like get back on board. So, and then, it's like, take a CE course on it and then kind of put it into practice, talk to your, I called one of my hygienist friends. He works, at the dental school, and he was explaining that, and I'm like, okay, so I think you got to have a level of self-awareness when, you need to get back in there.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with all of the listeners about what you do. I'm really, like I said, really excited to see what people do with the information. And if you would like, you can give your contact information if somebody wants to reach out to you, whether that be like your Instagram or email, whatever you want.
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram. It's at Jess Hollywoods. So Hollywood with an S. I'm working on some personal branding, so it might be changing soon, but I'm on LinkedIn as well. I'm happy to give out my email address. It's Jessica, Jessica Woods, Woods, RDHAP at gmail.com. I love, when people, hear these things, reach out to me. I get, contacted regularly, set up phone calls, have a little virtual coffee session, and I, really like mentoring people and giving back and just, sharing my expertise. I think that's how, I got my start, was, shadowing people and just reaching out, and it's created a lot of opportunities for me. I know, some people in Nevada that have reached out to me. I'm like, hey, I have a job for you here. This person's looking. So you just never know.
Yeah,
So I'd love to hear
absolutely.
from any of the listeners.
Yes, and I will leave all of the contact information in the description box of the episode as well so that they can find it there as well.
All right. Well,
Well,
thanks
thank
so
you
much
so
for
much.
having me.
Thank
Yeah.
you for everybody who's listening, and we will see you next time on the Brush with Brit podcast.